Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good morning. I'm joined here today by the Health Minister, Jean Atherton. Minister, thank you very much for sparing a bit of time in your busy schedule. Get straight to the point. It was around about 16 months ago now that the Health Ministry launched your vision of reforms to the health system for the next 5 years under the Bermuda Health Strategy. Can you give us an update? I know you've produced a roadmap in giving an update, but can you give us an update on where you are with the reforms that you wanted to introduce?
Well, as we indicated in the roadmap, the strategy sort of went from 2016 to 2019. And so each one of the roadmap had effectively 20 strategies, and those strategies are all being worked on by various organizations, some of them the Health Council, some of them the Hospital Board, some of them the Ministry. So, and I'm going from memory now, so pardon me if I don't remember everything. But first of all, it was important for us to focus on non-communicable diseases. So with respect to that, we put some emphasis on diabetes and obesity in terms of reducing the obesity levels, making sure that we made inroads with respect to diabetes. So though the diabetes strategy is being managed by the Bermuda Diabetes Association, and the obesity is also being managed, if you will, by the health department, in the sense that we have our Well Bermuda strategy. We're out there reminding people about the need for them to exercise more, eat less. We have the Well Bermuda plate so that people understand what it is that they should do to try and reduce our obesity levels, because whether we like it or not, the About two years ago, we actually did a survey where we went out and we actually, not only did we get information from people with respect to answering questions, we actually went out and measured people. You know what people are like. You ask them a question, they always tend to lean on the lean side, but actually we went out and we measured people. We measured body mass, we entered weight circumference, etc. And to my amazement, you know, we are having women's circumference, waist circumference, like average on 34 inches. You know, that told us something. So diabetes, obesity, non-communicable diseases. We also focused on the fact that we had to do something with respect to trying to deal with what I call the workforce. We have to improve the people that are out there involved in health. And so, you know, we have a workforce strategy which has been going on. We had a meeting just last week, just a month ago, where we were out. We work with the college, we work with the workforce and labor development, we work with our health ministers and a lot of insurers to talk about what are the new jobs that you're going to need for health, what are the requirements that one should have, how are we going to turn around and get people to go into that.
In terms of the strategy, 16 months on, has anything concrete been achieved? Have you ticked off any sort of milestones?
Well,
or is it an ongoing process?
It's an ongoing process, but if you don't mind me just looking at my document here, that reminds me that as it relates to some of the things with respect to the long-term care, we actually have been trying to deal with capacity. So we have a long-term care committee which is out there putting some strategies for the first year. Mm. We have a consultant which I think on May the 9th we're getting together with persons that want to build facilities.
I want to come on to that actually later on, if you don't mind, because there's some, you made some remarks at a recent speech which I thought were very interesting. So I want to deal with long-term care later on perhaps. But I'm kind of interested in the strategy and how it's pursued.
Okay, well, if you look at kidney disease, obviously we have been facilitating the monitoring and identification of kidney disease. So it means that part of the way physicians now capture the information. They have tests that they do. They identify it. So that's how we know that how many people are out there, not just on dialysis, but the people that are out there that are having the type of failures that are going to result in having to go on renal dialysis. And I don't know whether you saw quite recently, in June, we have made some structural changes in standard health benefits so that going forward, we're changing the costing for dialysis, but more importantly, we're increasing the amount of money that will be available for people to have kidney transplants. Because the bottom line is that if we can turn around and have more people transplanted, then it means two things. One, you don't have to go on dialysis right away. If we can get more people to be live donors, then it means that we can start saving. If you're talking about $150,000 for a kidney, but kidney transplant, but $200,000 for life be on dialysis. So that's very concrete. And if I'm looking at in terms of health technology, we're obviously working on and have been identifying outliers and identifying persons who are ordering more tests, utilizing it more, and having conversations with them. When I say conversations, at least letting them know that, hey, your ordering pattern is higher than the norm. And I know the hospital has also been having conversations with individual providers to say, not only is your ordering pattern higher than the norm, but have some conversations as to whether different types of tests are more useful in terms of predicting whatever you're worried about than another test. And so not having duplication. And
I was just going to move on a little bit, if you don't mind.
Right, go ahead.
You gave a speech recently to ABIC, and you made the point there that there's an under-regulated health sector, which is leading to increased costs. Regulations, good or bad, depending on which side of the fence you sit on, but are you looking to regulate more to control the costs?
Yes, because as we look at it, we know that Bermuda has the same type of issues that are around the world. And we have instances where persons are out there, I'm differentiating between someone who is a health professional and someone who's a health provider. Okay? So the health professions are regulated by their various councils, etc. Providers would be regulated by the health council, because you're now talking about persons that are having businesses, they're in business, and you're talking about what does their business do with respect to quality and care. And so it's important for us to recognize that there are instances which have come to our attention where persons have not been utilizing their equipment the way it should be, where persons have been overutilizing their equipment, where persons have been ordering tests, which perhaps in the long term are bad for patients, because over time, we've understood that overutilization has a negative, and ordering something for somebody just in case has a negative, because if they're exposed to, you know, certain types of radiation, if they're exposed to certain types of utilization, it has a knock-on. And on top of that, I mean, all of these things have made countries understand that it's important to know what people are doing, have guidelines, and have conversations with them. So
if it's under-regulated, then presumably you want to introduce more regulations. What kind of things do you have in mind?
Well, the more regulations would be turning around and saying that if you're going to turn around and introduce what we consider high-risk technology, then we want to be sure that that technology has all of what I call the proper protocols, the proper investment in understanding what you're doing, making sure that the right people are able to operate it, making sure that you have the facilities there that are suitable, and making sure that afterwards, when you utilize it, the utilization is appropriate.
So that's looking into the future if somebody brings in some high-tech stuff. Is there anything in the here and now you want to regulate?
Yeah, but
or see more regulations for?
But the here and now affects the future in the sense that if somebody's going to go and look at introducing something, They're usually introducing it because they believe one or two things. They believe that there is a gap in terms of the area, and there is a gap in terms of the availability of the service. Now, in terms of the gap, in terms of the area, one would also want to be sure that you have the conversations to talk about, in an island our size, are these types of things normal? Mm-hmm. Because we keep forgetting that you can't do everything on the island. Some things you can do in Bermuda, some things are better to be done off island.
Cheaper.
And I don't want to get into the how cheaper it is, because sometimes when you start adding the other costs, like being off the island and airfare and accommodation and being away, those things add up. So I'm saying that it's important for us to say, in an island our size, what is the norm for having certain facilities? What is the norm for having this type of service? So in terms of what we might want to regulate right now, you look at diagnostic imaging and you look at ultrasounds, and you say that we have a lot of labs. We have facilities there that can do our CAT scans, and you have to talk about what in an island our size, how many of those things would you normally have? And then you have to sort of say, okay, I understand that you always want to make sure that you have redundancies, but you have to talk about over time what's the utilization of those.
So those are the kind of things presumably you are looking at?
Yes. And in terms of regulation, we would be looking at, we want to make sure that every professional that's out there is regulated. There are some unregulated industries right now in terms of, you have
health industries.
You have medical technologies. You have massage therapies. You have a number. I don't want to go into everyone, but right now,
when you say right now, you mean they're operating here?
They're operating here,
and they're not regulated.
They're operating here because they've set up a business, but their business is health related, and therefore, in other jurisdictions, you would have someone regulating to making sure that, and I don't want to pick on any particular industry.
No, I don't know. But how is it, I'm a bit confused, how is it that they can set up a health-related business and not be regulated?
Because the way the Health Council Act was set up in 2004, at that point in time, the regulation aspect of it was not put into effect. So over time, persons have just come and it's been viewed as a business rather than a health provider. So just like any other place, you could set up a business.
Right. So just go back and say 2004, the Act was passed.
Right.
But the regulatory side of it wasn't passed.
No.
Has it been passed since?
No. So right now, the Section 13, which if persons have been following some of the Health Council announcements and information that's been put out, the Health Council is proposing to introduce Section 13, which would enable them to regulate health providers. And so that is why the belief is that there are a number of unregulated industries out there, professions, unregulated providers out there.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's important to turn around and get...
Why has there been such a gap? I mean, that's 13 years, huh?
Well, maybe I can think twofold. One, the council was getting set up and was starting to do lots of other things with respect to, collecting information about health, how we utilize the system, working quietly to turn around and get individual professionals to start to develop information about how they regulate themselves, evidence-based medicine. So some of those other things were being dealt with. And also, when you start to talk about regulation, you need to do your homework with respect to what type of regulations would you put into place, what type of issues have developed in other countries, so that when you put it in, you would like to think that you would get buy-in from everybody to believe that it's important, because whether you like it or not, you have this issue of people believe that business should be free and it should be subject to just competition. Let competition turn around and divide the survival of the fittest, etc. But it has been It has been understood that in health, health is not a place where you turn around and talk about just let competition.
Well, with health, you've got to ensure the health, the safety and the health of the patient.
A patient, right.
So if it's unregulated, how can we be sure that the health and safety of the patient? I mean, it's an obvious question to ask, but how can we be sure?
Well, you obviously have some of, there are some indicators out there. When I say some, and I will tell you some of them, but and then we can talk about why we need others. You have the complaints process. Okay, so if someone goes to a professional and has some concern about the quality of the service that has been given to them, they can complain. The health council receives the complaints. Also, the professional bodies themselves, and that's the other thing, we've been making sure that the professional councils have gotten a more robust complaints process. So right now, all of the professional bodies have not just the council, but now they have complaints committees, because before there was a problem that you had the council, the same council, reviewing the complaints, and therefore there wasn't this separation, and therefore there was a concern about whether you have what I call that...
Well, it's a conflict of interest.
Yes, right. Yeah. So you have the complaints process. You then have, obviously, you have the process where the councils themselves... try and make sure that individuals have guidelines of professional guidelines for the service, and then you have conversations with individuals about what type of things you should do, and if you're looking at things that come to their attention, whether it be through, let's just say, the hospital or somewhere else that indicate that there might be an issue, there's what I call the opportunity for peer discussions. So I'm saying that those are some of the ways in which individuals can be sure that their safety is being looked after. Now, on top of that, obviously, some of these providers have equipment which are subject to what I call statutory review. So you have your radiation equipment, you have, you know, your nuclear medicine, and you have you go to the dentist. You know, so every 6 months or whatever, I'm signing a certificate to say that someone's dental equipment has been licensed for another year, or someone's, you know, diagnostic imaging. So those are some things that have been put in place to say that they've been licensed, and the equipment themselves have been found to be satisfactory. Now, the other side of it is also the operation of the equipment. Who do you have operating? Who's qualified in those? So I'm saying that some things are in place, and over time, maybe they started off with what I call the bigger ways in which one would normally regulate. But it has been found, and it happens in other jurisdictions, that more regulation has to take place as it relates to the utilization, the impact on the patients themselves. And so these are some of the things.
Which is also a point you made in your speech to ABIC as well. You said that you made the point that some reforms, i.e. regulations, I think I'm quoting, have struggled in the face of opposition from some sectors of the community.
Mm-hmm.
Can you expand on what's happened there?
Well, if you look at it, if you understand, and I said from the point of view of some people feeling that things should just be, it should be competition, and you should decide, if I want to go out and be in this business, I should go into it, and therefore, if I turn around and I offer a big discount, and therefore you drive the cost down, and that means that what you would normally do in business, that the consumer would benefit, but what you find in health, that doesn't necessarily mean, that does not necessarily result in that benefit to the patient, because several things happen. If you're turning around and you're running your equipment, just running it, because the more you run it, the cheaper it is per cost, you run the risk of people having overutilization. And you have to be honest, it happens abroad, so we know it happens in Bermuda. Bermuda is no different. So if people are able to order tests, and the more tests you order, it means the more revenue you make, then that's an incentive.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but if you're ordering tests for people that don't need those tests, then it means you're exposing them, as I say, to types of radiation, and I'm not. It's not just radiation, but you're exposing them to things which are harmful to them. And so it's important that you turn around and you look at those type of things, because the bottom line is, you don't want to have an individual having to balance off what I call some of the competing demands on them. When I say competing demands, staying in business, doing things for their patient, knowing that those things in other jurisdictions have resulted in issues which have resulted in overutilization. So, as I say, Bermuda's no different, so we have to understand that that happens. Now, when we start to go down this path to say we want to introduce a regulation, of course you get the pushback, because people who haven't gone into an area will say, well, I really wanted to go into that area, and now you're preventing me from going into that area. The other side of it is that in a country our size, maybe you only need two or three. So if everybody went into that, that's going to result in more supply. And you know what happens. The other side of supply is utilization fueled by demand. And as we start to educate more of our public, we start to say to them, understand more about what you're being given, why a provider is telling you to do this, understand why you're having this test done, understand more of that, because when someone says to you that this regulation is going to result in something that's bad for you, you can question them as to, why should it be bad for me? If I know what it is, and if you tell me why it is, and I make sure that it's just what's important to me, then I won't be harmed.
It seemed to me that one of the biggest areas of opposition came in respect to pre-certification. Now, that seems to have dropped off the radar a little bit, but from my understanding of pre-certification, a lot of what you're talking about would be solved. So where are we with that now?
Well, pre-certification was a way of addressing this. So, as you can appreciate, if you had to go from Somerset to St. George, if you had to go from Hamilton to Somerset to St. George's, as long as you get to St. George's, whether you go Middle Road or Harbor Road in between, doesn't matter. So we've looked at it and we said it's important for us to deal with the utilization, to deal with the reduction in the utilization, to improve the quality. And so we said it didn't matter that we don't need to start off right away with pre-certification.
But that was the original intent, start off with pre-certification.
The original intent of pre-certification was to make sure that persons that are having tests that are not appropriate have those pre-certified. Now, there was a concern that we might have been starting off with what I call a presumption that everybody needed to be pre-certified. Okay, so we've said, okay, we don't really have that presumption. We have the presumption that people who are utilizing it more than necessary need to be monitored. So that meant that we've rolled it back. So now when you see the Section 13, it says, and even before Section 13, we said, we're going to start monitoring the utilization of lab tests and MRIs, and we're going to give you, the providers, information on the tests, the utilization that you have. And so we've decided to take it more softly, and we know in the last 3 years we've been talking to, getting information to them to say, these are the number of tests that you order. This is the average.
Do they care?
Yes. I think they care in the sense that obviously persons have started to reduce their utilization. I also know, because I've obviously had more conversations with the hospital, the fact that in doing their review, they've reached out to providers and said, as I said before, this test that you've ordered, and you ordered these five others, this test will cover these five, and therefore you don't need to order. And so they've used that as a way to have an engaging conversation with the providers to help them improve the quality of the medicine that they're protecting.
Quality and quantity.
The quality and quantity. So I'm saying that has resulted in more looking at what tests are being ordered, why they're being ordered. I also know that the physician community themselves have been having conversations as to different types of tests that are appropriate for different, trying to determine a particular concern that you have. You have a symptom and you're worried that somebody might have had this particular disease, and to sort of say, this is a more appropriate test. So the physician community is upping their game in terms of bringing their physicians more abreast of what their choices are. The persons in the hospital are also upping their game from the point of view of saying, you know, we don't need to do all of these tests, we can do less. The health council has not yet started to say to the physicians, why are you doing this? Why are you outside of the ordering average? But they have drawn it to their attention.
So why aren't they asking why? Because that's the crucial question.
Because right now, we had this conversation recently, right now, without the Section 13, which is something that says that they can ask, it is more of what I call you're asking something more as a promise, not a permission type thing, as opposed to you're hoping someone will deal with you on what I call a voluntary basis. That's the word I want. Okay. A voluntary basis rather than a regulated basis.
Okay, so you understand that, and we talked about Section 13 of the Bermuda of the Act. We'll come on to that. But despite all that, you've said in the speech that it's underregulated. So you're talking about a volunteer thing. You're talking about acting on a promise, or you know, do you mind doing that? There is a need for more regulation. Bottom line,
definitely, and that is why, leaving aside the regulatory aspect of it, we have made the changes in terms of the various acts that are out there. So you have the Allied Health Act, which is bringing more of the unregulated professions under it. And, I mean, by the time you stop and think, you've got the chiropractors, you've got the chiropodists, you've got the massage therapists. All of those providers out there are out there existing, but a number of them are not regulated. Even though you look in the book, if you were to go on the Health Council's website, you would not see a number of those people. And I mean, you've got acupuncture, you've got people that are doing the dermatology, you know, a range of things.
Okay, so let's come back to the Bermuda Health Council Amendment Act. This is the Section 13 you're talking about. Mm-hmm. This has been, like you say, in the pipeline for many years. There was an attempt, wasn't there, quite recently to get it passed. That wasn't passed. When are we going to see it come back to the House?
Well,
in what form?
Right now it has been tabled in the House. I just haven't taken it up. And it was tabled in the House because there was a concern when I first tabled it. And it was set up such that if you were a provider and you wanted to bring in a piece of equipment, you had to apply to have the piece of equipment approved. And the basis for that was that would give providers the opportunity to have conversations with the health council as to whether the demand is there, whether the need is there for Bermuda, and to talk about, you know, if you're bringing this piece of equipment in, how appropriate it is. Maybe it's better to bring another piece of equipment in because down the road this is where it's really going to be going, and therefore why not do this rather than that. It also meant that there would have been the opportunity to talk about, you know, whether in a place of our size you were going to get the type of volume that was going to be appropriate, because sometimes people can think, great, I'll bring this in, but you just don't have enough volume, and before you've invested it and then you try and get into all of that and then you have to run it, then it would have been counterproductive. There was a real concern that because we were doing that, we were really stifling competition. And therefore, there was a feeling that that shouldn't happen. Now, we looked at that and we thought, okay, if some people, and I say some people because I heard what was out there and I said, okay, I am prepared to accept some of the concerns and roll it back and say we won't turn around and prevent you from bringing it in, but you're going to have a license to operate it so that we can be satisfied that when you operate it, all the right checks and balances are in place from the point of view of where it's going to be, who's going to operate it, and then it would be regulated. So we made that change, and right now the Section 13 Amendment Act has been tabled in the House with this removal of the fact that you didn't have to have approval to bring it in. But having said that, like everything else in Bermuda, we have people coming up to and saying, "You really should have left it in. We believe that."
So when are you actually going to take it up?
Well, I am going to take it. It's been tabled. I want to make sure that when I take it up, that we can get the passage, because I do not want to turn around and have people not understanding the impact that it can have on quality, the impact that it can have on health. I would like to think that instead of it being people just not wanting to do it because they are putting what I believe are their personal concerns ahead of what I believe the public concerns. So I know the Health Council has been meeting with the Medical Doctors Association, the various professional associations, to get the buy-in. So I am biding my time to make a decision as to when the time is right to go and introduce it and make sure that the public understands the benefit to themselves.
Will pre-certification be in that Section 13?
Well, not pre-certification, but if as a consequence, part of the regulations would indicate that if as a consequence you have someone that's an outlier, and an outlier says that your ordering pattern is over and above the average, then you have the conversations with the council and the insured, and then it goes through the insured route. So the insurers are then able to have the conversation as to why. So there's a form of review of utilization.
All this, of course, all this affects health costs. Now, I think there was a report recently that said since 2008, health costs have increased by 78%. You made the point that in 2015, the costs are starting to come down. They came down by 1.1%. Given the lack of regulations and reforms, is that reduction sustainable?
Well, the costs that are driving, the things that are driving the costs are not just utilization. The things that are driving the costs are the other side of what I call the poor health of the population.
Right.
So it means that we have to focus on how are we going to improve the poor health of the population. And that gets back to your non-communicable diseases. And that gets back to your obesity, your diabetes, your heart, and the renals. And so we are saying that we have to focus on those items. In addition to the utilization, we have to focus on those items because they are the ones over the long term that are going to change the cost. And so when I talk about dialysis, you can imagine that if I can turn around and if I can save, and if I can get those people off of dialysis, what did I tell you, 200,000 a year? I mean, just for 10 years, that's 2 million.
Exactly.
And so, I'm saying that, so we're looking at every one of those things. We're looking at diabetes. We're looking at type 2 diabetes, and we're saying, what can we do to try and turn around and make people change what they're doing so that they can reverse? And now that we know more about reversing diabetes, we know more about what can we do. So every one of these, every lever that I can pull, I intend to pull, because it isn't just about one thing. And even when we talk about seniors and we talk about aging, we have to talk about that in the context of the cost and the cost to the community. And the more importantly, I have to say, if I'm turning the tap off, I have to turn it off back with the children, and I have to turn the tap off with the 40 and 45-year-olds. So that's why we're in the schools. We have the Premier's Council. We have the Healthy Schools Initiative. We're turning around saying, how can we stop children from eating, unhealthy things? How can we stop children from wanting sugary drinks? And we're doing that. We're starting to see the change. And then so now we're talking about the 40s, the 40-year-olds and whatever. We're saying to them, exercise more. You need to turn around and do the things that are going to change your lifestyle so that by the time you are the 50 and 55 and 60, you have a better pattern because you're going to live longer, and I need you to live longer, healthier. And then, in the meantime, I have to talk about the seniors.
So is that the rate, is the 1.1% decrease mainly down to people looking after themselves better, do you think, and lack of, so they're not utilizing the service?
No, I'm waiting to get more information. I think it's a combination. I think it's utilizing some of the services, but the utilization of the services shows that it's sort of ill people using less.
Right.
So we're going to have to do more of our surveys to talk about whether our healthy people, more healthy people, are adding to the pile. But obviously, because of the way it's captured, utilization is based on claims, which it means it's ill people or people that are using the system, whether they're ill or not. So what I'm trying to say is that's why we have to turn and we have to say, can we make sure that it's the right people using the right service at the right cost? And that gets back to somewhere like the hospital. If we can get people in other facilities that cost less, that means the cost of health goes down.
So the 1.1% decrease in cost was 2015. Are there any indications of 2016 yet?
Not yet, because that information isn't out. But my understanding that it's trending down. So I believe that we're on the right path.
The overseas costs, of course, have gone up very significantly, I think, since 2004. For the 2015-16 year, they doubled to 84.5 million.
Well, but you have to stop. You have to stop and think that at one stage we had over 100 million. You know, so what we've done is that we've reduced some costs that can be done on the island, and as a consequence of reducing the costs that can be done on the island, it's gone down. Just imagine when I opened the radiation therapy unit, I think on May 15th or May some whatever else, all those people that used to have to go off the island will now be able to stay on the island. So that means that the cost of radiation then should, the overseas cost should go down. It also should mean that the knock-on in terms of people having to go and spend the weeks and the loss of productivity because they're off island, then they'll go have what's done and come back. So we keep tackling it in every way that we can, and once this is put in place, we'll be able to turn around and show that going down too.
Recently in the news, of course, the hospital's in the news, the acute wing anyway at least, when we heard that every single bed in the emergency department and the acute care wing was full, then of course we heard that patients were being placed in the maternity and the children's ward, and then we heard that surgeries were being delayed. Why did all that happen?
I think it was a combination. You have what I call the flu season, and it was pretty bad. You have, you know, what I call, going with that, you also have what I call the asthma-related illnesses, you know, that happened all around that time. And so right now, I mean, after that, you know, they got through it. We now looked at getting people out of the hospital back into what I call the rest homes, nursing homes. But more importantly, we're looking at the long-term solution. The long-term solution is that we have to have more beds in the community. The long-term solution is that we have to have people being able to keep their seniors at home and make it cost-beneficial for them, because whether we like it or not, people know that if you go into the hospital, the care is paid for.
Hmm.
And so we have to, and when I say we have to, I as the minister have to turn around and make sure that it's cost-effective for people to stay at home. So hip and future care, when they have that benefit that says if your senior is at home, there is a certain amount they will pay for a caregiver to come into your house to keep the person there. We're turning around. We have the enhanced care pilot that says for those individuals that need their care managed, we're putting them into the program so that they don't not manage their care because they can't pay the copay to go to the doctor and they go into the hospital.
Yeah.
So all of these things will have the knock-on of saying, hospital, we want you to be there for the acute. We recognize that there will be some people that will need that higher level of care. We are working with them to come up with costing for that so that they stay there, but other people, we want them to be able to be discharged into facilities that are appropriate. And then we want to make sure that we have some more facilities. So the enhanced care pilot from the hospital, the enhanced care pilot, which is hip and future care, the patient-centered medical home, which is the hospital, those are places where we can start to deal with, as we all know, we have what we have in other places. We have 20% of the people accounting for 80% of the cost.
Just going back a little bit there, you mentioned there was a flu season and the asthma season. Those things happen every year. Have you spoken to the hospital? And it was a combination of that and the long-term care, agreed. But these things don't come by surprise. They happen every year. Have you spoken to the hospital about what it's going to do in future years to stop this happening?
Oh, yes. I mean, we've had conversations with the hospital. But as I say, part and parcel of this is making sure that you have people not coming into the emergency, because that's the way they've been home not feeling well, and then all of a sudden they're overwhelmed in the hospital. So the other side of it, coming in September, we're also looking at having some more managed care, so that with our seniors we can say, okay, we will manage your care with a physician so that you can go to your physician and have yourself looked at, so that you don't have it going down and down and you're not going to the doctor because you can't afford the copay. And as a consequence of that, by the time you get there, it's worse. So we are looking at all of the factors that have influenced this, because the bottom line is we want the hospital to be utilized for what it needs to be, which is acute care.
So are you pretty confident that the same time next year we won't see the same problem?
I think that the same time next year we will have pulled many more levers, so that I don't anticipate that. I am planning that with the levers that we have going forward, that we should be able to manage it next year.
Obviously, long-term care is an issue there. I think in other jurisdictions it's called bed blocking. July last year, Dr. Claudette Fleming, Age Concern Director, said long-term care in Bermuda is still in a crisis situation. Now, recently, again, with the ABIC thing, you said that your ministry is working on solutions to long-term care because of this crisis. There are clearly not enough beds in the community. And you said, interestingly, that you've started a project to stimulate private sector investment in long-term care. Active discussions with developers and potential financiers to mobilize this sector are taking place. What is that about? Can you expand on that?
Well, the committee that is looking at long-term care from what I call a demand perspective, will be coming up with an indication of the various type of facilities that Bermuda will need in the next 5 to 7 years, three to five years. In order to deal with that, we have to turn around and we have to say we have to create them. So there will be a meeting in early May with persons who might want to develop these facilities. Now, some of them are people that are already have nursing homes and rest homes that would like to add to their homes. Others are people that perhaps might see it as an opportunity, because sometimes people understand that, hey, I'm going to get old, and it would be nice to see that the right type of facility is in place. So the committee, I have a consultant who is reaching out to all of these persons to talk about what might be out there, because we understand that if we're going to be 21st century, we have to have different types of facilities. It's not just a rest home, a nursing home, and it's not just an acute care facility. We have to have the whole range. We have to have people that are going to have independent living. We have to have people that have to have assisted living. We have to have people that have facilities for Alzheimer's and dementia. We have to have facilities for disabilities. If you stop and think, we have forgotten that, leaving aside the fact that seniors are aging, the disabled individuals out there are becoming more numerous. They're living longer. The parents that are looking after them, some of them, are also aging. So that we have to turn around and we have to have all of these different types of facilities out there. So what we're trying to do, we're trying to say, well, let's start to get people interested in developing these type of facilities. Then let's start talking about how I can use the funds that I have available to me to turn around and pay for some of the care, how financial assistance can use some of the funds that are available to them to be able to pay for some of this care. Because the bottom line is, if you're having someone in a bed that's too expensive, that you don't need to be there, we're wasting our money. That's what's being worked on.
Are we going to see more homes developed then?
Yes, for sure.
Have you got a timeline?
Oh, I don't have a timeline until the committee has the consultant has the meeting with the developers that are out there. Some developers are out there; they have plans, but for them, the other side of it is going to be finding the finances.
So, are these local and overseas finances and developers?
Well, the developers all right now are local. Now, with respect to persons that might want to provide funds, we don't know yet. Obviously, you're looking at the bank. At the current time, we are trying to make it financially sustainable so that as a business, and I used the example the other day, and, you know, people didn't realize what I was thinking, but I'm saying this. Long-term care is really another industry, another hotel industry. It's a hotel for seniors. It's a hotel for the disabled. There are people out there that are going to be in these beds. We have to turn around and we have to make sure that it's not just the beds. It's also making sure that we have, as I said earlier, we have to have staff that can make these facilities work. We have to make sure that we have the right staff to care for them and have the quality of care that they need. Then we have to make sure that we have some way that it's being paid for, and we then have to make sure that we have the right type of result for the patient. So,
when you put it all like that, though, of course, one of the big issues is cost. How are you going to actually make sure it's cost-effective, or not cost-effective, but affordable to people?
Well, but then that's the other side of it, in the sense that part of all of this is to make sure that the homes will be regulated. Okay, so we are beefing up the regulations of the home so that when you go into the business, you understand what you're supposed to be capable of doing. So then you make sure that when people get into it, they know what type of staff they have to have, what type of meals they have to provide, what type of ancillary things that they have, so that when they come up with their business plan, everybody understands what it will cost. Now, the second side of it is to come up with what can be charged for that. Okay, so in some cases we have charges right now which probably will need to be increased because we know that it's not sustainable. We know that people are charging these costs because they want to get people into the facilities. But in some cases, insurance pays up to this level, but the patients' families have to pay something more. So what I'm trying to look at is to say, if I have my subsidy resources, how can I turn around and $30,000 to have a person in King Edward, I could have $20,000 for them in a what I call the level one care. I could have $12,000, if you will, for somewhere else. So that money can be divided differently depending on what I'm having to pay for.
So government will subsidize it.
Government will use its subsidies more appropriately as it relates to the care. The other side, though, is that I'm obviously talking with insurers, and I'm saying to insurers, people need to start to look at planning to get old and need a hotel. And I keep saying that because I want people to think about it. They need to start planning for their care or the care of their family members or to keep their family members at home. But if I can also have more people staying at home and not going into that, this is all money that you're out there. We're paying this money's out of these pots.
It's a bit of a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because if the onus is more on the insurance companies, the insurance payment's going to go up.
No, because we're not trying to put onus on the insurance company. What we're saying is that if you turn around and have subsidy, don't forget, age subsidy pays in some cases 70% or 80%. So government already has a lot of skin in the game. So what we're saying is that if people want to have some other benefits that they might want to have, it's good to start to have insurance, to start planning for. I mean, I've heard people talk about retirement savings, and retirement savings for health. Lots of things we're looking at, but the other things, if you're understanding about the cost, there's opportunities for group buying. There's opportunities for incentive for people to put together some of the facilities that they use on a one-off with a group and have the economies of scale. So all of these things, I'm saying that we have to help them bring the cost down to make it sustainable so that they can stay out there.
We're running out slightly out of time, but there's a couple of questions I do want to get to. Stomatica hasn't gone away. Recently, we've had a report that it remains extremely enthusiastic about the positive role stem cells may play in the future of medicine. And it's still looking, it's still working closely, perhaps to bring something to Bermuda. Has there been any movement on Stomatica in terms of regulations? I think there was a legal challenge last year about it. I'm not quite sure. Is there any movement? Have they been in touch with you?
Well, in Bermuda, they would have to make an application to the Research Ethics Committee. And I'm not aware that an application has been made, but I know the last time they did make an application and the last time a question was raised, I encouraged them to, you know, that they know what the process is, so I encouraged them to undertake the process at a point in time of their choosing.
Would you welcome them here?
I think anybody that comes to the island, we have to just make sure that the whoever comes meets the hurdle, the research hurdle, because the bottom line is when we say that they come, there's an expectation that it's been vetted and everything was fine. So I can't answer that question because until they go through and, you know, go through and are vetted, I'm not in a position to be able to say one way or the other.
I mean, one of the issues, of course, originally, there weren't any regulations, so this called a kind of treatment or research. I guess no regulations in place now.
Well, the Research Ethics Committee has a protocol that they go through to determine whether, you know, anybody that comes to the island is able to introduce a particular treatment, and especially if it's a research. And so they have a protocol. I know other people that have considered doing things on the island have, you know, reached out to them and had discussions, and they go through the process, and if they're vetted and accepted, then, hey. But you know what, and I say that because even in terms of the radiation, people forget. That had to go through a process. That had to, you know, people had to understand what, you know, what was going to happen, et cetera. So.
In the last budget, the finance minister mentioned the BHP at 100 million. I'm not exactly sure where this figure came from. I know that as a result of that, he actually cut the grant, I suppose, by 23 million. They said they had this 100 million in the pot, as it were. Do you know what this 100 million is?
Well, obviously BHP can, you know, elaborate more on this, but I know some of it is relating to some of the major capital projects that they believe that they have to deal with. And I think if you go on their website, I think there's some information about how it would be spent, whether it's relating to electronic medical records, those type of things. But I do think that, you know, they have some plans, and that's related
to that. So presumably if the minister's taken 23 million off that, some of the plans are being shelved?
I couldn't answer that for BHP because obviously their timelines and how they adjust their timelines, they're the only ones who could really answer that.
I know the next year's budget's a long way away and you're not meant to speak about it, but do you think the same thing will happen next year?
Well, I think
you're going to fight for that to be
realized? Well, yes. I mean, we've had conversations with the Minister of Finance, and I think the Minister of Finance indicated to them that, you know, that he understands the need for their services and what they would do, and so that the intention would be, I'd be striving to make sure that they're back at the normal level.
One other question I wanted to ask is the Mental Health Act is under review. Mm-hmm. What do you hope to achieve? What do you want to achieve with mental health in Bermuda?
Well, I think it's important for us to make sure that with the changes that we make to the Mental Health Act, that everybody on the same type of concerns we have about physical health, that we get to that same level as it relates to mental health. When I say get to that same level, making sure that there are protections for people that have mental challenges, making sure that persons that have mental challenges have the type of care that they require, making sure that for persons that, you know, have mental challenges and disabilities, that they don't have things that cause them to be discriminated against as it relates to services that they should have or even jobs or all those type of things, I think, are important. And so I recognize and the committee recognizes that it has to look at all of that to make sure that we bring it up to standard, and then we start to make sure that the same type of coverage that we have for people is there. And make sure that the types of facilities that we have and some of the things that happen to people because they have done things which might have been influenced by the fact that they were going through some mental challenges that if they need to have that considered, whether it be in the mental health court and other places, that we're looking at all of that. So I know all of that is under review, and making sure that even for persons who are incarcerated, that we make sure that they are properly, that we can try and give them the type of facilities and treatment which will help them to get back as much as they can to...
So the three people who are transferred to the UK will be brought back, or are we going to see more people going to the UK?
A lot depends. When I say a lot depends, and I obviously can't answer that, but I think the belief is that they should get the treatment that they need to get to the level where they should be or can be, and then it becomes, I think, an issue after that of if they've served their sentence, what happens after that, or if they haven't served their sentence. So I think all of that is part and parcel of this review which is taking place to make sure that as individuals, the system deals with them in a fair manner and from a point of view of whether it be treatment or from a point of view of something that you have done and price that you have to pay, if you will, that is fair, and then the system is adequately dealing with that.
If you had one wish for the health ministry, what would you wish?
I don't know. And the reason I say I don't know, because I don't think that I would ask for more money, because unless you have a good system, then money isn't going to do anything. I think what I would want would be for everybody on the island to take stock of the role that they play in the system. And I use that, you know, the Michael Jackson, the change, and the man in the mirror. And I really do think that every one of us has to sit down and talk about the role we play in the system. As an individual, what are we doing to make ourselves healthier? Are we walking? Are we eating less? What are we doing if we have some illnesses which are hereditary? Are we following the instructions of our physician? How are we spending our money with respect to the services that we buy? How are we living our lives so that ultimately, I mean, the goal of our ministry is healthy people and healthy communities. I have money out there that we were going to utilize with respect to clinics. And so I want people to use the services that I have. I want the appropriate type of care being used by the people so that ultimately I really want to reduce the premiums. I want them to spend less money on premiums, more in their pocket, so that they can be healthy and happy.
On that note, Minister, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.